Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Il cross, prima attenzione, Bobo anticipato, palla vagante, mette giù, recova, il tiro,
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 106 of the Interviews podcast. We are here for the post-match reaction of Inter-Arsenal, which finished 1-0 to the hosts at the San Siro, a goal from Hakan Çalhanoğlu in the 48th minute. As always, we are the official podcast of SempreInter.com. I'm Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Gianni Paterno. Johnny, for a game that was very involved as far as the Twitter community for both clubs, we couldn't get through it without bringing on another fan here. Who do we have jumping on the episode today?
So I made a few calls. You know, I was trying to get somebody a little bit more important, a little bit better of an Inter fan. And we had to settle on this poor guy. You know, desperation kicked in, and we got Nick Costa here, the other Nick, when I've had them both on at the same time, which is normally chaotic, but a lot of fun. But yeah, we brought on Nick Costa from the Brotherly Pod, who, I mean, they talk about the sad Philadelphia Flyers, but he is a massive Inter fan and actually a good friend. So glad we were able to get him on.
I was waiting for the insult, and it's a pleasure to be back. It's been a while, and yes, this is the first time my path crosses with Alessandro's on here.
Very happy to have you on, especially for this tie, which I think when the Champions League schedule came out, this is definitely one that all Interisti, probably all Arsenal fans as well, circled on the calendar, was very excited for. And I typically, you know, kick off these episodes with a question to get things started, but I don't think that's the way to go today. I think the way to go today is to hand the floor over to Johnny. This is your time to gloat, man. You did secure the victory here after a long time of going back and forth with these Gunner fans. So
I was just going at it right now. I was literally just going at it with one right now, who was saying that, you know, we got lucky, we were outplayed in our own pitch, we played scared, and I was like, still won. You know, kind of like when a guy says still hit, though, you know, same thing. We got the 3 points, 1-0. They're like, oh, you only scored one shot on target all game. Cool. You had 20 shots, you said, right? 0 goals. So would I rather you get more shots out and then not score? Or would I rather you take advantage of the opportunities given to you? Got the 3 points. They ran their mouth. They said we're no better than Brentford. Ironic, because they just lost to Bournemouth not too long ago. They lost to a Newcastle that's reeling. And now they just lost to probably the hardest competition they're going to face all season, because let's be honest, the EPL is kind of a joke right now. And who do they got to blame? Nobody but themselves. Nobody but themselves. They ran their mouths all summer and you came up with an L. Okay? I said your title defense is, or your title attempt is as weak as your shot attempts. So good luck, man. Good luck finishing fourth again, being mediocre as always, Arsenal. You're a third-rate club in your own city. Chelsea runs that town. Tottenham's won a trophy more recently and actually made a Champions League final more recently. And you guys can't even get there. But yet, Inter Milan is Brentford to you. Okay. Okay. Congratulations on your style points victory. That's what they're trying to claim now. They outplayed us. Cool. We sent our B team out against you. That's how little we took you seriously. So enjoy the moral victory, which is something Inter would have done under Spalletti, coming out of our banter era. Now we actually get the points. So you have no European pedigree. You absolutely don't matter to us. You're a joke of a club. And you now have the loss to prove it. I'm done.
And scene. There you go. So it's actually been kind of disappointing a little bit. I thought they would have been clapping back a little harder, but Interisti are just roasting them on Twitter. So I guess we showed up on the pitch, showed up on the in the Twitter community, and get the resounding victory. one of the things that really sticks out of my mind here is that for the past couple of days, we've been talking about this projected lineup, this formation that was our B team. A lot of people calling it our B team. I was fairly confident when I saw what the lineup looked like. I thought Darmian for Saka was a perfect call, and I was feeling pretty good, not expecting that we would be dropping points. Given all the discourse around the lineup coming into the game, Nick, what was your expectation for today? Did you think Inzaghi was going for all 3 points, or do you think he would have been happy walking away with one?
That's a good question. I don't think he's ever playing for the draw. I think he had the Napoli game in his crosshairs. I think if you're asking any Interisti seriously, like if you had to pick a game to lose or drop points, which one would you rather lose and drop points? It'd be this one, right? So the lineup he put out there clearly was a statement that Napoli matters a little more, but he still got it right. And unlike other games this season, the bench players that he called upon actually stepped up. Like the Young Boys game, the bench players that got the chance didn't step up. Today, they were massive.
Johnny, what did you think prediction-wise coming into the game? Did you feel like we were going to take all three?
If I'm being honest, yes. And I know that's going to be hard to believe because normally I'm a little bit more pessimistic, but I really did not fear Arsenal. Like I just was not impressed. Their season has been a massive disappointment. The guys that were scoring goals for them last season have not been scoring those goals this year. Odegaard was coming back from injury, so I thought that was also going to be a bit of a relief for us in terms of controlling the midfield. He is a fantastic player. But you know, knowing that he wasn't going to be having key minutes for them, I felt much better about it. Saliba is one of the most overrated center backs, in my opinion. Don't see what, like, people calling, like, EPL fan. Well, I'm sorry, Arsenal fans are, you know, trying to call him the best center back in Europe. That's laughable. The best center back in Europe wasn't even on the pitch today. You know, he was taking a breather. He was more worried about Napoli. So I thought we could get the 3 points. I didn't think it would come off a penalty. I thought there would be something where, you know, a guy would be able, whether it was a Fratesi or Taremi, I thought that somebody would be able to get space in the box. Now, Taremi did have, I thought that it was going to be on target, at least. I'm not saying he was going to score on that kind of bicycle-ish attempt there. But, you know, saved by the arm of Moreno. And now we were able to take a penalty and Hakan slotted it home. But I didn't feel like that game was out of our hands. That first half, I thought we dominated. I really thought that we played them off the pitch, and I was very happy with the performance, and I'm glad we were able to get the result because I truly thought that we were the better team coming into it. All kidding aside with the way our performance have been recently, but I did think that we were the better team coming into it given the results that we've been able to get. So I thought that we would comfortably get all 3 points, and even though it was a little scary towards the end there because they were on the front foot, we still got it. So,
yeah, you mentioned Saliba there, but just talking about Arsenal as a whole, like one of the arguments that their fans are putting forth is like, oh, well, look at the XG. I want to talk about Arsenal's performance. We don't have to get into a whole like stats thing, but I just want to talk about Arsenal's performance. Their whole game plan was spamming crosses into the box. Like at no point in time did it feel threatening. Like I know that there was Dumfries' save off the line, but that wasn't a particularly like powerful effort on goal. Bissek had some block shots. Like all the center backs were heading the ball a lot, blocking shots, stuff like that. But it was all just like off of putting crosses into the box. And there was no, it didn't feel like I was watching a team that the whole, you know, footballing world has been talking about. This is their year that they're going to challenge City. Like, it didn't feel at all like that. And if Dumfries puts away that opportunity that he has 10 minutes into the game, you're talking about a completely different game plan for Inter, because once you go up that early, they're forced to come at you a little bit more, and then we can start playing the game that we want to play, which is hitting them on the counter. So it just wasn't like, I thought that was a thoroughly unimpressive performance by Arsenal. They can point to the XG and say whatever they want. They can say that we parked the bus, but it's just like, for me, it's not parking the bus. It's you showed us your one hand that you're going to play. We could defend it, and that's it. It's an easy way to play through this game and keep everybody in you know, in form or healthy for Napoli. Is that sort of what you were thinking as well, Nick, watching this Arsenal team that just didn't, for me, live up to the hype?
Yeah, and real quick to backpack on Gianmarco here with Arsenal fans saying Saliba was one of the best center backs. That's the call. I mean, I know it's been discussed many times, but that's like the calling card of the Prem face, is they just grandstand their players as if they're the next coming of Maldini or whoever. And really, they're just mid at best. And your stupid league just got more national, worldwide coverage the last 10 to 15 years. Other than that, your league is shit, and so are your players. That being said, now, yes, it seemed like the ball was either going out to Martinelli or Saka, and Inter did a good job of, you know, if Saka had the ball, Bissek was out there backing up Darmian. If Martinelli had it, Dumfries was getting backup from Pavard, or Fratesi would come over and back up. And yeah, that's all they did was spam crosses. I tell you what, they are pretty threatening on corners, but
yeah.
Inter had it well covered, and I was a little worried with that starting back three, because all three have been kind of hot and cold this year, but Bissek was a monster back there today, and so was Pavard was good defensively. That defensively wasn't very good going forward, and De Vrij was very good back there. I mean, the back three did great, and yeah, that's all Arsenal had. Like, they had a couple close calls, but a center back was there to block a shot. I can't think of, like, an amazing save that Sommer had to make. He made that nice little dive when Havertz tried to chip him far corner.
Yeah.
But I can't think of, like, a holy shit, we got away with that moment. You know what I mean?
100%. And also, like, this is the second time that they've played an Italian team and didn't look inspiring whatsoever. It's every weekend you can see Saka cut in onto his left foot and score this great goal. And it's like they come up against the Italian team. It's like, well, we watch you. We know exactly what you're doing. And there's a very simple way of being able to defend that the best league in the world apparently still hasn't figured out. But Nick, you bring up Bissek, and Johnny, I got to kick it over to you. This is a guy that we've had effusive praise for on this podcast before. It's also a guy that we've been tough on because he is young and he's made some mistakes. A lot of people were watching this game as the marquee European matchup this week. What did you think of what Bissek showed on the European stage this week?
Yeah, I think he rose to the occasion. You know, like, that's something you want to see a player who is still a little raw be able to do. You know, he didn't shy away from the bright lights. The moment wasn't too big for him. Whatever cliche you want to put onto it, you know, he was able to match that performance and put out that effort that we were looking for. I was very pleased with it. You know, one of the things that, and I'll give a shout out to our friend Tony here, who he complained about, was like, hey, you're 6'5", and you're letting a guy outleap you in the Venezia game and nearly win the game himself.
Yeah.
Today, he did not allow anyone to outleap him. He was going up for every ball in the air. He was outleaping them, heading the ball clear, very strong in the air, very strong even too with his reactions on some balls that were loose within the 18 that, you know, could have been a little scary. He had that huge block on, I believe it was Havertz who got in there. And he was able to go just a bit wide.
Yep.
I mean, just massive performance from him. So, really happy that he stepped up. And I think that allows, you know, Inzaghi to have a little bit more restored faith in him going forward, where it's like, okay, I know he has the capabilities. I know he can rise to that occasion, but now he doesn't have to worry about, you know, do I rotate here? Can I rest Bastoni? Can I rest, you know, Acerbi, whoever it is? He sees that he can actually, you know, rely on Bissek, and that's huge, man. I think, you know, when you have that ability to rotate that many center backs, especially when, you know, De Vrij is really an unknown, Pavard's an unknown, to have that flexibility is great.
Doing the job at left center back today, which is, it's just huge to have that positional versatility across the back line. Just staying with the back line here, Nick, you did bring up De Vrij. So this has been several games now where he's put in a 90-minute shift because Acerbi is on the bench here. How do you feel after Acerbi's likely coming back this weekend? How do you feel about this, like, De Vrij fill-in portion of the season, how he's performed up until this point, having to cover for our regular starting center back?
Except for the Juve game, I thought he's done well. And I'd be okay with him starting against Napoli as well. But De Vrij, you know, he's still young for the earth, and he's younger than me, but like he shows signs of like his age, and he has his occasional brain fart out there. But I've been pleased with him. And just to talk about Bisek as well, let's point out that he played against Manchester City and Arsenal and helped keep a clean sheet in both games. I mean, when Bisek has his awareness up, he's, call him Megatron. All the American fans out there, we remember Megatron, Calvin Johnson. I mean, he's probably just as big as Calvin Johnson, and he's a freight train when he has the ball. If he could just be a little more decisive when he has it at his feet. But when he's got his awareness up and he's not letting guys get in behind him or outleap him, he's a monster back there, and he's so young. He has so much room to grow. And De Vrij probably needs someone like that next to him who's just a beast going up in the air. And, you know, no one really can outrun Bisek so far. Have you got? I can't think of a time Bisek's been out. Like, no. He stride for stride, he stayed with Saka today. I mean, he's a monster. And but yeah, you asked about De Vrij. I'd be okay with him starting again. Was Acerbi available today if needed?
Was he on the bench? I think he was on the bench.
Yeah. I saw him warming up. I mean, I don't think they were going to call on him unless it was like an actual, like, you know, break glass in case of emergency type thing. But
yeah,
he was there.
He did make the bench. Yeah.
Do you think he starts on Sunday?
I really think that he needed to get minutes in this game in order to start. At least just something on his legs. The fact that he didn't, I think he's probably behind Hakan in the recovery. And even though they both made the match day squad, I don't think he was ready for minutes. So likely going to see De Vrij again.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it too. I think he's got what it takes to pocket Lukaku. But another, you know, big story about this game is that there were two incidents that had the fan bases asking for penalties, and I want to go through each one of them here. So first one is Sommer on Merino in the first half, that a lot of fans on the internet are claiming that this was a penalty. Before, Johnny, I'm going to kick it over to you, but before I go ahead and do so, I do just want to pull up the actual video so we can see it in real time, because I think it pretty clearly shows which way this call should have gone. But why don't you go ahead and give me your take here on whether this was a penalty or not?
I mean, if the refs from Fiorentina are here, I guess this is a penalty. But same exact instance. Gets the ball first, just happens to follow through, same exact way. This is not a penalty. Just because his hand goes through and actually makes contact with his head does not automatically mean pen. Like, I think people need to get that through their head and understand that if you are he's not going to punch him, he's going for the ball. And what does he do?
He's
makes contact with the ball like he's supposed to. If you want goalkeepers to not even make a challenge on balls in the air, then just take away the gloves and make them play with their feet the whole game. Like, just, you can't even use your hands then, if that's the point. He is allowed to go up for that ball 100 times out of 100. And once again, Jan Sommer does time it perfectly, because yeah, you mean, he gets the ball first. Sorry, Marino, that you just happen to get hit on top of it.
Nick, do you feel the same way looking at this image here? I mean, it's pretty clear he gets to the ball first, but you even have them on ESPN, like, even like Rio Ferdinand is in the broadcast saying, like, you know, that this was obviously
another cartoon
penalty.
Character.
Oh, yeah. He's a fucking Muppet.
Yeah.
No, this is not for discussion. A goalkeeper is he has a right to try and make the save. Like a goalkeeper is entitled to the ball. And what's funny is to bring up the Fiorentina match, the Fiorentina one was even more clear that he got all ball like way before contact was even made. That was a joke last year. And the ball didn't lie. Sommer still made the save on the penalty kick. No, this is not a penalty. He gets the ball first. He's entitled to make the save. He's entitled to the ball. Go cry about it, you moronic Premier League fans.
Yeah. I mean, here's what it comes down to. If we're not going to allow goalkeepers to challenge for a ball that's coming into the box, then like, what are we doing? Like, what exactly do we want this sport to be? He makes contact with the ball first. Obviously, Marino is in the vicinity and takes a hit, but that's a challenge. You go up for a challenge, you enter the zone here, it's fair game. And he gets to the ball first. This should not be up for discussion, but unfortunately, the Prem face community is pretty loud on Twitter. The other thing that they were pretty upset with was that Marino's hand was in a position where it was obviously unintentional. That thing was so far stretched away from his body. It's almost comical that you can make this argument, but apparently that would not be called a penalty in the EPL. Nick, I'll go with you again. Like any argument here? It's just like,
to be fair, I do think it was a little harsh. I mean, I'd say it was kind of like bent like this. No. Like, people can't see me there listening. I mean,
it's away from the body.
But yeah, it was a little harsh. If they would have taken it away, I would have understood. But the ball's heading towards the net, and there's your argument, right? Hands away from his body. A little harsh, but at the end of the day, ball's, like I said, ball's going towards the net, and it hits your hand. Sorry, bud.
Ball's on target,
Johnny.
Okay, it's going on target. It's a penalty every time. I mean, I get it. I get it. You want to have the EPL, but like, look at who CBS has, right? An Arsenal legend, a Liverpool legend, a Manchester City somebody, and they got a Manchester United goalkeeper on the sidelines. The variety on the CBS broadcast and the ability to have an actual conversation is lost. Like they're all bitter. They're all upset. They can't believe Inter. Oh, they sat back. They just defended. No, no, no. You got that female player, former player, complaining about, oh, you know, they just look like they were just trying to squeak by. I've had enough of hearing about this English bias. Okay, if that was De Vrij who did the same thing, they'd be screaming from the mountaintops for a penalty and then praising the referee for his ability to call the right, make the right call.
Yep.
So, but because it's Inter, it's a problem. It's a problem. I'm tired of it. Like, just can we please get some variety on here? For the Serie A broadcast, you only have two Juventini and a Milanista. For the Champions League broadcast, it's just the EPL. Just get the NBC studio crew to do the Champions League then. If you don't want anybody from any other league, just get some people, split the money with NBC, and you just have, you know, the same, you know, the two Robbie Mustos and this guy and that guy, and, you know, bring out Ted Lasso for the laughs, and let's call it a day, because the lack of unbiased reporting that we're getting for both leagues that we follow is disgusting.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of hurting the image of the league, because the way that they talk down on these other teams and then they actually 100%. Play the other teams and the results aren't good in the favor of the EPL teams. Like, look at the EPL teams, what they did in the Champions League this week. Aston Villa lost, Man City lost, Arsenal lost. Like, it's not, the more you talk down your opponent and, you know, you're clearly the superior league, and then you put up duds of a result, it's like, you're not helping the case here. You're not helping the cause. It's just, it's kind of embarrassing. And it would be night, like, even Del Piero, like, they've had him on the broadcast a bunch. Like, even if he was there, I think he would have talked up Inter a little bit more as a legitimate threat. I think Henri did a better job of at least saying, hey, like, this lineup is reflective of what they think about Arsenal. which I thought was a really good point to make, where it's like, yeah, we're not rolling out the B team to lay down. They're rolling out this team because this is what they think they have to put out there in order to beat you. Like, they're not worried about, you know, getting rolled over at home because they know the guys that they're putting out there are going to be able to get the result. So, it is pretty difficult to listen to, and it's obviously not something that Serie A fans in America are really enjoying.
Did you see how Aston Villa lost?
I haven't seen the highlights of that game.
Johnny did. So, I don't know the name of the defender. He thought the play was dead. So, was it the goalkeeper, Johnny? Passes it to the defender.
The goalkeeper kicked it. You know, like when Sommer plays it short to, like, Bastoni, or he plays it short to Pavard? Well,
yeah,
he played it to the same way. This goal, Martinez played it to the goal defender.
Yes, it was Mings.
That's
what
it was. It was Mings. Okay, so yeah. Mings grabs it,
bends over, picks the ball.
Picks it up, puts his hand in, tries to bring it back.
Oh, this is bro. Bad.
Not I would great, lose my but, mind if somebody did that at Inter. Anyway.
Yeah,
tough to do it on the Champions League stage, but that's what you get from the Premier League. All right. Another thing that I think is really important to touch on is the end of game tactics here from Inzaghi. He subs on Di Marco, pulls Taremi, and goes 5-4-1 to end the game. That substitution happened in the 79th minute. From that period on, it was one-way traffic towards our box. Johnny, you and I have spoken about this as not something that we appreciate seeing a lot of times because of our blood pressure, but most of the time is because you just accept pressure and anything could happen when you chuck it into the box. Even though it's not, you know, an impressive strategy, it is a tough way to see the game out. So I'll go with you again, Johnny. Even though it worked out, anything after the fact that you're questioning about that being the move from Inzaghi to pull it forward and go five at the back?
Yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. I thought that we kind of had them in a good place where we were able to at least kind of get a little bit of a counterattack started by having the two options up top. Once you take one off, then you're basically surrendering attacking, and they know that they could just keep everyone across midfield and just continue to try to like spam crosses and try to get lucky. And I was waiting for, honestly, like I was a little worried that one of them would just pinball around the box and then somehow end up in the back of the net. Fortunately, it did work out, but like you saw some frantic defending there and you saw a lot of mistakes being made. You know, I saw you tweeted out, which I 100% agree with, that Aslani once again proved he is not a Regista. Mm-hmm. I felt like he made some mistakes, some poor challenges.
He
chances,
shied away like, from challenges. Like, that's the biggest thing. 100%
shied away from
challenges.
He just
doesn't look, yeah.
There was times where he was on Dumfries' side of the pitch, and one instance I remember perfectly is he dribbled past, I believe it was Pavard, and then he had an opportunity to really probably just slide in and at least kick the ball out of bounds, and he chose to just turn and keep running towards the 18. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Even if you fouled him, it would have been a better decision than what you just did. So I just don't get the experience. I don't know if he's just worried about his knee or whatever it is. Obviously, we saw him wearing a little bit of a brace there. Okay, maybe I can understand that. But at the same time, man, like this is, we're trying to see out a 1-0 win. You need to be like all hands on deck, ready to do anything you can to help your team win. And I didn't see that from him. Other poor decision making. There was one time right outside where Di Marco played the ball to him and he turned and just played a pass to nobody, like just absolutely nobody. He could have turned inward and gone to Turam. He could have gone backwards and passed to Hakan, but he turned and just gave up possession immediately. And it's like, I don't know. I don't like to pick on players. I don't find joy in it. It's just,
I do.
You hope that you hope a player would mature and figure it out. And when you're playing alongside or learning from someone like Hakan, you think you'd be able to pick up some tendencies. I'm not expecting you to be a carbon copy of him, but you have to know in certain situations what to do and when to do it. And it just feels like the game is either moving too fast for him to react and make the right decision, or he's just not at the player that we were hoping that we signed when we brought him from Empoli. That's what it's sadly looking like.
I don't think it's like being critical of a player. It is, we're just talking about what we saw on the pitch. And for me, the thing that I won't be able to get out of my mind that it was like, in my head, I was done. Like, he is a mezzala. You can't play a regista. Is within a couple minutes of him coming on the pitch, there's a ball that goes up in the air that he clearly could challenge for.
Yes.
And you see him immediately back off, like start, you know, looking around like he's shielding his man, waiting for De Vrij to step up and come to the ball. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was just like, he's not in it. Like, there's no grinta to challenge for the ball in that moment. It's not, we don't have to spend a ton of time talking about Asani, but it was just something that you see it and you're like, okay, this is, he's not bringing the kind of grinta that you need for a game like this. Nick, any thoughts on Aslani and then also the tactics to close out the game where Inzaghi goes full Corto Musso in honor of Nima?
I think they need to look into the transfer market and move on from him. He had a couple bad turnovers.
Somewhere at Ricci.
Yes, that'd be great if they got Ricci. But I was not impressed by Aslani at all. And at the end of the game, the tactics. I don't like when Inzaghi like plays that, you know, like the NFL, they call it that prevent defense, prevents you from winning. Like when he gets way too passive, I don't like that. Like, keep your foot on the gas a little bit. And you knew Arsenal was going to push, right? You know, they were going to push, just like we would have pushed if we were down 1-0. But I'm okay with the sub. I just, because it worked out, but I would have preferred maybe keep DeMarco totally fresh for Sunday. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's my two cents on Aslani and the leaking tactics.
And like to kind of piggyback off that too, it's like we know DeMarco's deficiencies defensively.
Yeah, he's not a great defender.
another opportunity to throw on Buchanan and like just get some minutes in his legs.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't get
to like just allow him to play faster. A little
he
bit
would have been
higher,
much better on the wing to be
look
able
for
to
him. Go fly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I think he would have been much better on the wing there. Because, it gives you that threat down there. And, you know, I didn't see anything last season. Obviously, he didn't play a ton of games, but I didn't see anything in his defensive abilities that made me think, oh, he definitely can't handle this. You know, like, so I don't get it. I agree. I would have much rather had DeMarco totally fresh for the Napoli game because I feel like that's going to be a game where we're gonna want him to be at 100%. So,
yeah, DeMarco does come on, but both wingbacks, Dumfries and Darmian, end up getting 90 minutes, which is very, very against the grain for an Inzaghi team. Those players are usually switched out at some point. Let's talk about these wingbacks because
perfect.
Dumfries was pretty dangerous today. Pretty dangerous. Johnny, I'll let you get into Dumfries' game a little bit.
I got to give Huyan's boy some credit. So here you go, Huyan. This is going to be me giving the highest of praises to your guy, Denzel Dumfries. I thought he played phenomenal all game. Going, that shot, outside of the boot, millimeters away from just going down and in. Like, just unfortunate. Yeah. Top chatter. It would have been nice for him to get that. I think that would have just broke Arsenal right away, honestly, and they would have been finished from minute two, essentially. So very unfortunate, but the man was huge, great defensively. I thought that he was making good challenges at the right times. He wasn't afraid of anyone, didn't back down from it.
He does.
He really does. Like, I mean, it's not always pretty. I'm not going to sit here and say it's the most beautiful form of playing, but it's it was very effective today. I think that he had Martinelli very scared, to be honest. It looked like he was shying away from even
didn't
really
do
attacking.
Anything.
Not a thing. And then the goal line clearance. It's so funny. Like, whenever I get mad at Denzel Dumfries, and whenever I'm like just, although today I wasn't, but whenever, what does he do that same game that I'm like the maddest at him? A goal line clearance. It's insane. This guy has an ability to be in the right place at the right time on the goal line when we need that goal line clearance, and massive from him to keep it obviously 1-0 lead for us. So listen, hats off to you, Denzel. I am truly impressed, and you know what? Maybe he may be getting me to turn around a little bit and be okay with him getting an extension. Just saying. Just say maybe.
I think he's suited well for the Champions League for some reason. I think he gets
for whatever
more
reason.
Space.
He struggles with like the Venezias of the world, but right. He just Champions League nights he shows up. So I'm okay with. Although in the Champions League final, I still didn't forgive that. But that's it. That's all I'll say. That's my one little dig at him. Sorry, Huyan, but that's it.
Was that Benfica? He had that crazy clearance.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, it might have been Porto. It was one of the Portuguese sides that we faced.
You're right. Because it was Porto because it was before the Onana double save.
Yes.
Nick, why does it seem like every time we ask Darmian to do some Swiss Army knife bullshit, whether he's filling it at left wing back or right center back or wherever the hell Inzaghi wants to play him? Out of his preferred position, he puts in a shift that you'll never forget. Like what is it with this guy? You see him get the contract extension for another year, and you're like, wow, like more of the older players sticking around. But then he pulls games like this out.
Look, Gianmarco and I talk about him a lot in our group chat. Like he's the ultimate team guy. Like that's someone you want on any team. Like I wouldn't even hate him if he played for Juve or Milan, like, because he's not dirty, he's not a diver, he plays the game like a gentleman, and he just, going forward, it's not the prettiest thing sometimes, but man, like, he's got great football sense out there, always in the right position. I mean, he usually doesn't make that many defensive gaffes. Like, he's as steady as she goes back there, man, and you never... Well, under any coach we've had, he never complains. You could put him anywhere back there, and he'll just put in the effort. And yeah, he's just a classic Italian defender, really. Like he's just not the biggest guy, but again, he's got grinta too, and not dirty. Just not. I think I love the guy. Like, and it's funny. Like he went to Manchester United. Remember in that club's been a disaster since Ferguson retired, and shocking, he leaves that pit of despair and revives his career here.
And completely pockets their best player, the player who like they want to hype him up as like, you know, should be in the Ballon d'Or conversation. And he just, I'm positive Inzaghi wrote Darmian's name on the team sheet knowing that Saka would just not be a factor, like worried about it. Like, this is it. He's taken care of.
Yeah, and to talk about Dumfries as well, like I like to pick on players. Him and Mkhitaryan are my top two. Mkhitaryan probably number one. That might have been his best game as an Inter player, Dumfries, even though he didn't end up on the score sheet. He's got the grinta, right? He's always up for it against Teo, right? Like that's why, you know, he's always inside Teo's head. Today, he wasn't backing down from anybody. And that's, again, he's also not very pretty going forward. He has no touch whatsoever. But, like, when you watch him play with the Netherlands, they're like, where's that for us? Like, run at them. Go after them. Like, use your speed. Like, that's one thing he's got. He's gritty and he's got speed. Use it. You know what I mean? I hate when he runs down the flank and, like, stops and is scared to do anything and just plays it back. It's like,
Once he gets going, top speed, like it is, he is a hell of an athlete. All right, this midfield, Calhanoglu returns to the starting lineup. What did you think of his overall game today, Johnny?
It's amazing what you're missing when you don't have Hakan in the starting 11. Like this guy is just, he's incredible. I liked him even back when he was in the Bundesliga. I was so jealous when Milan signed him that year when they signed like almost everybody. Like, you know, they went crazy that summer where they got another guy I wanted who ended up being a bust. I'm not going to name his name, but there was a guy who did go to Milan, a defender who I wish we would have gotten at that time. But anyway.
Ricardo Rodriguez?
No. But that's actually not a bad shot. But no, it wasn't Ricardo Rodriguez. But anyway, like, yeah, hot. And then, you know, I wasn't excited when we got him only because he kind of had a bit of a down year with Milan. And I was the biggest Christian Eriksen fan. I have his kit. you know, I wanted Eriksen to really shine under Inzaghi. I thought that this was going to be his moment to really break out and become like Luis Alberto 2.0 in the Inzaghi system. Unfortunately, we know what happened, but we got Hakan. What a consolation prize that ended up being. And I know some people are going to be like, oh, he's better than Eriksen. This, two different styles of player, two different players, two different systems that they were playing in. Let's please not compare the two. All right, let's stop with that. It drives me crazy when people say, like, oh, he's better than what we had in Eriksen. It's different. But Hakan is just the... I have to say, I like him more as a Regista than I did ever liked Brozovic as a Regista. Like, yeah. I feel like Hakan offers way more. Obviously, he doesn't do the arm-throwing stuff that Marcelo does. But he's got a complete game. He really, like, the range of pass. Not that Brozovic wasn't good. That's not what I'm saying, people. But the range of passing that Hakan has, the ability to shoot from distance. Sure, Brozovic would take those shots, but they never looked like they were going to be on target or going in. This guy, like, I mean, we saw the free kick goal that he scored. We've seen what else he's when he decides to, you know, go up against Milan and shoot from 40 yards out and just bang him home. And, you know, we remember what he did against Barcelona. Like, this guy is just so important, and he's so calm back there. And it feels like that it allows the other midfielders to play a little bit more freely because they know they have Hakan back there. Like, Fratesi didn't have the best game, but you could see that he was a little bit more calm when he did have moments with the ball, which were far and few between. But, you know, it just feels like everybody else feels like, hey, we're okay. Hakan's back there. No need to panic. So...
And I hope also, go ahead.
No.
I was going to say he also said after the game that he tried something different with the penalty kick and waited to the last minute to see where the goalkeeper was going to move. So I guess this whole time, like, he's, you know, what we all grew up being taught what you're supposed to do is pick your spot, stick with it, and stick it there. He has the, you know, the balls in a big game like this to switch up his style and be able to put that PK away, which was another perfect PK, 19 for 19 as an Inter player.
Lethal.
We've talked about this a lot, Nick, but where would you put Hakan as far as irreplaceable players for this Inter side?
This season, number one. I think it showed while he was out.
Ooh.
I think to be a good regista, and that's you have to have ice in your veins. And that's why Brozovic was pretty good at it. That's why Çalhanoğlu has excelled. And that's why Aslani is struggling at that position. Like Johnny said, I can't think of anyone else in Europe right now that when they're in form, who hits a ball as hard and as clean as he does. You know, when people hit the ball, they lose, you sacrifice accuracy when you do some power. Like, he doesn't sacrifice accuracy for power, whether he's passing or shooting. Like, he's a menace out there. And I also was not excited when Inter signed him, because I'm like, the guy from Milan who sucks, like, I'm not looking forward to this. But I don't think he was treated well there by the fans. I don't think Ibrahimovic treated him very well. There's clips and there's actually a few clips out there of Ibrahimovic like being nasty to him out on the pitch. And I don't think he had much confidence when he was at Milan. Comes to Inter, which I think Inter is a much more healthy atmosphere than Milan. And you can see why he's exploded under Inzaghi, because I think he's being treated better by his teammates, by his coach, by his fans. I mean, I think the proof's in the pudding when he scored his first ever goal against Milan with us and he celebrated like he just won the league, because I think he wanted to stick it to them all because they all treated him so poorly. And yeah, I thought, like was said earlier, Inter dominated the first half. And I think it's mostly because of Çalhanoğlu, the way he just, when he's on, he controls the game. And everyone else around him is able to just relax and do their thing.
Isn't it crazy, though, that when... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I went last time.
All right. I was just going to say, isn't it crazy, though, that when like you have the faith and the support of your manager and the group around you, just how you're able to like perform consistently and perform to the best of your abilities, and you want to show up for your teammates, for your manager, for your fans. Like, I feel like that this whole situation for Hakan has just rejuvenated him and allowed him to really flourish, become the midfielder that he is. And I don't know if that would have happened had he stayed at Milan, regardless of the money or and whatnot. Like, yeah, obviously we paid more, but I mean, we're seeing now that even that was a bargain if you really think about it with the performances we've gotten out of him. So
yeah, the trophies we've won with him.
Yeah, yeah. And he finally got the Scudetto he was chasing.
Yeah. He's great.
And the fans obviously have been super good to him, like middle of the game, just chanting the Idolo Nero Blu song at him, like just randomly throughout the game. It is really, he has a very special relationship with the fans. And it's great to see. All right, let's touch on one more player, and then we have some questions, and we'll go ahead and get out of here for the night. I want to talk about Taremi a little bit, because I think, I know before the season I had much higher hopes. I tweeted before the game that he was my make the most of the moment player. I really thought he would get on the score sheet here. He's scored in the Champions League. He's had great performances for us, but it does feel like he's kind of getting lost in the weeds a little bit as far as the expectations that we had for him and then what we've seen so far this season. And the same thing happened today. Like, just on the pitch, it feels like he's getting lost in the weeds. Nick, where are you at with Taremi so far? Is this just a matter of, like we've seen with a lot of Interisti, they come in, it takes a little bit of time to settle into the system, and eventually they start firing? Or is there a little bit of, okay, you know, I don't think we, you know, knew exactly what we were getting here?
I wasn't too familiar with his game, you know, when he was with Porto or the Iranian national team. I think maybe the lack of minutes he got out the gates that first month kind of stunted his growth here. I mean, he had a great game against, was that Red Star?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He's good at pressing. I'll give him that. Even today, like, he did a pretty good job of pressing. It's just, you were hoping for a little more, but I felt like Lautaro didn't even get that many offensive chances today. I felt like our two strikers really weren't that offensively involved, but I'm not ready to give up on him yet, but you would like to see a little more, especially in Serie A when he gets minutes, because sometimes the way Thuram and Lautaro are going, you need him to step up.
Johnny, give us a status update of where you are with Mehdi Taremi.
He's on fraud watch. So Nima, you better check your boy, get him to wake up, because you came in with all this hype that this guy was going to come in, and I was starting to become a believer. I really thought, like, hey, this is a big upgrade on the other guys that we've got. And outside of that performance against Red Star, and really a couple, a couple of instances here and there throughout the season spread out, I haven't really seen it. And especially when he's a starter, you haven't really seen it. Again, another guy, I hope that he does figure it out. You know, I hope. But the good thing is you don't see him pouting and throwing temper tantrums like a certain other striker on the bench. So it's not like it's messing with his head. He's still going out there and trying to do the best for the squad. And although the hold-up play has been pretty good and consistent, you want there to be just a little something. It's like almost – I can't put an exact word on it. But something is just like a little missing. And listen, maybe it'll take like an ugly, you know, goal like Lautaro scored to kind of like wake him up and break that that duck. But he's on watch. He's on watch right now. Okay, so Mehdi, you better watch out, because you and your boy Nima Tovali Rutsari might be getting the boot if you keep this up.
Man, this is setting up hopefully a winner against Napoli right now. All this energy, hopefully it's getting channeled into.
Listen, from your perfect, mouth to God's ears, bro. I hope.
That would be a great way for him to get back in the good graces here. All right, let's get into some Q&A here. So we were asked if we're happy with the lineup. We got into that. If we play like shit, yada yada. Okay, is Serie A more important than the Champions League? I would have said no at the beginning of the season, but with our form not being the best and us having a long season ahead, I just feel our frailties have been exposed too early, and Champions League teams will exploit them too easily. That's from at Griffo Gaming. Nick, what do you think? Do you think there's a little bit of prioritization one over the other going on right now?
Yeah, I think today's lineup showed that the Serie A is a little more important. The last two winners poorly defended their title, being Milan and Napoli. And I want to go back to back, and I hope they all feel the same way, because the Champions League, we got close, you know, the year we lost to City. If Lukaku wasn't such a bottler, maybe we would have actually forced that game into extra time, and who knows what would have happened. But no, I want to retain the title. I mean, obviously, I don't expect to win 9 in a row like Juve did, but I'd like to go back to back, retain the title, and have even more scudetti than those douchebags on the other side of the city.
Johnny, where are you at on this?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I said in the beginning of the year that I thought that they were going to focus on the Scudetto, and the main European trophy or trophy they were going to go for was the Club World Cup. And like Nick said, you can kind of tell it that they're not that they're not caring about the Champions League, but they are putting a focus on the league a little bit more. You know, knowing that you're going up against Napoli with a chance to take over and take first place from them. I think that means more to Inzaghi. I think that means more to the club. You know, getting another title under the belt and increasing the gap with Milan would be huge for us, huge for bragging rights. And I think that, you know, it just shows that, you know, we are still the darlings of the Serie A and the team to beat. You know, even when you look at the performances all season, right? We have not, like Nick Diani said it last week, we have not looked our best, not once this season. And we're still in striking distance of first place. Whereas Napoli has had to, you know, take advantage of their cookie cutter season. And then when they go up against somebody with any talent, they drop 3 points. And now they're going to go up against us and see another team. And I think that we're going to be motivated, one, to kind of stick it to Conte, because I think there is a little bit of bitterness with the way he left and the fact that he left. You know, and I'm sure some guys felt like, you know, they were left high and dry by, you know, they just won. And now that because he wasn't going to get everything he wanted, he was upset and decided to peace out. So I think they want us to like show like, hey, had you have stayed, you could have been, you know, winning titles for many years. You know, who knows? We could have been the ones that went on a 9-year Scudetto run. Even if we did lose Hakimi and Lukaku, I still think that with the players that we would have had, we still could have been competitive with under Conte. And I think that they're going to want to show that we are the better team, and that, you know, it doesn't matter if you reunite with Lukaku 12 times, we're still better than you. So we'll see it. We'll see it this weekend.
Yeah, I think for me, I think Inzaghi is looking at this league phase and is saying, I can get to that top 8 spot with the rotation and with this schedule. And I think he's going to push that rotation in the Champions League for as long as he can until we get that bye and then into the round of 16. And then we'll start seeing the lineups get, you know, a little bit less rotation, a little bit more our top starting 11 in the Champions League. But I think he knows he can manage the Champions League with rotation right now, and that's how he's deciding to play it out. And obviously, it's working out in his favor. We're 2 points off of top spot in the Champions League league table. All right, only going to take a couple more questions here because I do got to run. Let's go with at a person 1352. He says, who is, in your opinion, the best player to play for both Inter and Arsenal? Lots of great names like Bergkamp, Vieira, and Alexis Sanchez. I'm going to go Vieira. I think, personally, I have the fondest memories of that time when he was at Inter. So, for me, obviously, he was huge for both clubs. I think he's part of the story for both clubs. So, I'll go with Vieira. What about you, Johnny?
Yeah, I guess, in terms of what they, I'm going to go based off what they did for both clubs. And I'm going to go with Vieira as well. I think that obviously he was a part of that Invincible team. He was towards the tail end of his career. I ain't dead, but I still remember him fondly. You know, he did help us win, I think, 3 straight league titles. So yeah, I mean, I have nothing but good memories of Patrick Vieira. I was super excited when we signed him. I remember when we got him from Juve when they got relegated, so we were able to pick him up and rated them for a few other guys as well. So thank you for cheating. It paid off for us beautifully.
Scumbags.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna go with Vieira. I can't say Bergkamp because he was a massive flop at Inter. As much as I liked him as a player once he left, not the guy.
What about you, Nick?
I'll just say Alexis just to be different. He was a menace at Arsenal, especially like those mid 2010s, dude. He was fucking awesome. And you know, Alexis was just like Vieira. He was at the end of his career here, and he showed flashes of like his class while he was here. You know, he had the game winning goal in the Supercopa against Juve, if you remember that. Scored a couple nice goals for us. You know, he was here for both Scudetti, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah. So Inter legend Alexis Sanchez, 2-time Scudetto winner.
I do feel really bad for Dzeko. That's one thing I do. Like, Sanchez got 2, Dzeko got none. There's no justice.
They sent him a little.
Dzeko's one of the most underrated strikers of all time.
Agreed.
You know what's a name that wasn't on this list, but just came to mind here that I
know
wish would have worked out much better?
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Podolski.
Listen, when we signed Podolski and Shaqiri,
for him.
Yeah. I thought those two guys, I was like, we're back. Inter is back. Jerdan Shaqiri, we're winning it all. Podolski's coming in. Oh my God. With Mauro Icardi up top, we're never going to. And yeah, 6 months later, Shaqiri's gone.
And Pablo Osvaldo? Yes. Same team.
Oh, your boy Danny. Osvaldo.
Dude, Danny does the Batistuta when he would score goals.
I love when he went after. I wish he would have knocked Icardi out in that in that Juve game. I was hoping for it.
Oh well.
All right, last question here. We're gonna go with at FC Andre 1908. He says, "Seems like the Inzaghi rotation plan is working. Clean sheets all around and points on the board. Should we trust the process a little more, or are Arsenal just a little bit shit?" For me, I think this is like a trust the process thing, which I'm sure everyone is going to say, of course, he was going to say that. But I think I'll point to Inzaghi in the press conference after the match talking about Bissek coming into the game with injured ribs, wearing, you know, a wrap around his torso and on painkillers, talking about the injuries that guys had coming back from international break. And just, it does seem like the way that Inzaghi was talking about it, a lot of the squad is a little bit banged up. Bastoni didn't play today. He came off the game, the last game early with, you know, some cramping. So I think the team is really banged up. And I think this run of results, while not pretty, the results are pretty. The performances are not pretty. But it does feel like a trust the process thing where he's just managing us through a difficult period as far as everyone's health is concerned. And I'd rather be peaking later on in the season than, you know, as far as performances are concerned, I'd rather be peaking a little bit later than in November. That's where I am on it. Johnny, what do you think?
No, I mean, I would agree with everything you said. You know, like, I think we said it early in the season where we need to just trust Inzaghi, in the preseason episodes, I should say, that we need to just trust Inzaghi, trust in what his vision is and his plan is. You know, I've said it before that, you know, we're not the ones who are at training. We're not the ones watching what they're doing, knowing the pains that they may be going through, the fatigue that they may be experiencing. So when we see things that we don't agree with, we do have to kind of remember that. And I know I'll speak for myself specifically. I know I forget that a lot. You know, I can get pretty animated and heated about certain things, and it's because, you know, I'm a fan and this is my favorite club and team in general to follow, no matter what the sport is. So yeah, I mean, I think that if we just trust in what Inzaghi has planned, I think he knows what he has to manage and how he has to go about attacking all of these competitions that we're going to be participating in. And I'm sure like he's just going to be able to right the ship, and hopefully we're going to be once again collecting multiple trophies at the end of the year. So
what about you, Nick?
I think he knows what he's doing, Inzaghi. It's just there's been a couple games this year where he rotated like young boys in the Monza away game where he called upon some guys and they didn't step up. And that's not his fault. You know what I mean? And yeah, we're trying to find that consistency as well, like on a game-to-game basis. Like the way they dominated Arsenal in the first half and really didn't even concede any high danger chances in the second, you're like, where is this on a week-in, week-out basis? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I just would like to, like I said, I'd rather be sloppy now than, you know, that usual winter depression they go in. So get it out of the way now. Get to the next international break, hopefully in first place, and come back from that and go. And, like, find your form. I do trust Inzaghi with the rotations because we do have a, theoretically, we do have a better bench. And obviously, repeating last year, game for game, stride for stride, is not possible. You know what I mean? That last year was a magical run. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, this Napoli game is pretty much the end of this 7 games in 20-day stretch where we've outperformed as far as results are concerned, but it's just the performances that aren't making everyone too happy. All right, let's go ahead and get on out of here. Nick, thank you for jumping on. Where can the people find you and come across your stuff?
You can find me on Twitter at ForzaInter215. Be nice if you followed me back, Alessandro. And
I don't follow you?
No.
And wow, I occasionally, that is yikes.
I occasionally jump on the Brotherly Pod. It's not my gig. That's it's my terrible. Buddy Dan's. We talk about the Flyers if you like hockey. I mean, I'm from the suburbs of Philly. I'm all things Philly. And yeah, you can hear me just scream about how much I hate the Flyers on that podcast.
Minor league hockey.
Essentially.
All right, Johnny, anything for the listeners here before we jump out of here?
Let's see if you guys are actually listening to the end of this episode. Because you know, I'm planning on doing another card giveaway here soon. It's going to be of a left wing back who might have a golden left foot. You know, so if you are Maxwell. Listening, Maxwell, exactly. Damn, bro, how'd you know that? If you are listening and you do get to this part, comment on the post for the episode specifically your favorite number so I can kind of see if you actually did pay attention.
45, Mario Balotelli.
All right, I'll write that down. You'll be on the list. And if you haven't been following Nick, this guy's the biggest Mario Balotelli fan in the world, and he still has been calling for him to be called up to the national team. I'm pretty sure he wrote a handwritten letter to Spalletti to try to include him into the Euro squad last year.
Magazine clippings of the letters and like you better start him. I know where you live. But didn't work.
Now he's gonna get to watch him every weekend. So
he threatened Bianca.
One step closer.
What was it? Is that his what is Biancanieve? Is that his goose? Spalletti's goose? Is that the name?
I don't know. All I know is Balotelli is going to excel.
I think he needed
he's
Snow
home.
White in Italian. Yeah.
He's going to excel. Balotelli's home. He's going to be in the Azzurri in the World Cup. Book it.
He already got a yellow, so he's already excelling. he got on in the 86th minute. In the 88th minute, he got a yellow card.
That's on brand. What a legend.
All right, the very first interviews episode where you're given homework. Let's see who turns it in on time. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.